I love baptizing babies. I love it so much because it's a reminder to the parents and to the godparents and to all the family gathered, as well as the household of God, that we are always within the community of God. We are always with God wherever we are, and that God's presence doesn't rely on us. For which of these children could speak and say, "Give it to me"? It doesn't rely on our understanding or our explanation or anything. This is the difficult teaching Jesus is speaking about in the gospel this morning, because he is telling his disciples and all who are listening that they can only come to believe in the Father if the Father leads them there. And so in essence, they say, well, then what are we supposed to even do? Why would we follow you if we're not going to get something from the effort? Let's talk about that. You see, we're used to having to bring something to the table. Whether it be a feeling or a thought or a skill, almost all of our relationships rely on us bringing something to the table to make something happen. We often think transactionally because that's what the world operates on. What will you give me if I give you something? The most simple example of this is work. If I give you work, you'll give me money. We both agreed, right? But baptism is not transactional. It's a covenant. It's a promise made in good faith. The parents today and the godparents today will speak on behalf of the kids, because someone has to speak up these words of faith. Because our words have meaning, and yet our words will always fall short. Jesus in our gospel today talks about being the bread that has come down from heaven, and that all that need to follow him or want to follow him and be one with him need to eat of his flesh and drink of his blood. And these words, they're like not really working. They don't make a lot of sense. Who can believe, the disciples and others say. When we think about life, about the spiritual life transactionally, as if Jesus' body is ours to munch on, we can start to think that God's existence relies on our understanding. Can you explain God to me? Often we think we have to. That's the question we so often think we have to answer. And rarely do people talk to one another about their spiritual life because they're afraid they'll have to explain it, and they know they can't. Therein lies the struggle of the spiritual journey. Because we live in finite categories like spreadsheets and time zones and bank accounts and property lines, we can begin to think that the mark of a smart person is to know the parameters. You can see the predicament, right? What do we do when we are relating to infinity? What do we do when we're relating to the boundarylessness of the love of God? Yet, friends, I posit, as Jesus is doing in the gospel today, that this is the good news. The good news is that none of us can fully explain God or need to. And babies remind us of that. I would be foolish to not state and recognize that we do all desire to understand God, though. We do want to know God in some way. You wouldn't be here if that wasn't the case. You wouldn't be here if you didn't already know God in some way, if not in your own life, but through your relationships with the people you've come to see baptized. And this is where we feel the tension between the institutional historical church and the life of following Jesus. I will be the first to admit, as a person who is charged with leading in the institutional church, that the church has said over many centuries that people need to do something in order to be a follower of Jesus. First this, then that. At its worst, the church has held this over people, threatening them or promising them things if they would just do something. And maybe some of you have suffered at the hands of the church in that way. But we know deep in our heart that God doesn't require us to be in church every Sunday or give a certain amount of money or time to the church. So we may wonder, then what's the church for? This is a question I like to reflect on as I consider what to do with my time as a leader of the institution. Why do we come to church? Why do we come as often as possible to give of our time and our money to this institution? Why do we even need the church? I have come to an answer. I can't fully explain it, but I think you will recognize it. It's so we come to church so that we can engage in a place which reminds us that life is a mystery. We come to the church because we need a place which will remind us that we will never fully understand God. But God doesn't require our understanding in order to exist. We come to church because it's here that we can remember that love is real and not dependent on our worthiness. And I consider and ask you to consider, where else are you going to hear this? Reality TV? Reddit? TikTok? Your news feeds? A political party? A supper group? A hobby or a leisurely activity? You would probably readily and quickly admit, even eye-roll worthy, that of course not. The closest it might come in our lives in this world is with your family. And everyone here knows the limits of family. When we expect our families to provide all the love that we need, we expect too much from them. Only God can give us what we most deeply need and desire, which is unconditional love. Only God is perfect in that. To whatever extent our families give us unconditional love and it's realized in those relationships, it's because the family acts as a conduit of God's unconditional love. And the more that we experience God's unconditional love for us, the more that we discover how to give it out, how to share it in the world, including in our most intimate relationships, our families. Let me give you a couple of illustrations. Today, in our baptismal promise, I will ask you, will you seek and serve Christ in all persons, loving your neighbor as yourself? And you, because it sounds good and because it's written in bold, will answer, we will, with God's help. But if we were to think about this, Christ in all persons, any one of us would recognize that not one of us contains all of Christ. It's as if our little frame is a thimble. And God's infinite and merciful love is as expansive as the ocean. Even when we look out at the horizon of the ocean, we know it's not the end. It baffles our mind how that thing goes all around everywhere. Even when the wave crashes on the shore, that's not the end of it. So consider if the ocean is God's merciful and abundant love. That all can't fit within our little thimble. No one little thimble of us can hold it all. But when we drop the thimble into the ocean, it becomes buoyed and filled with this infinite and abundant mercy and love of God. And thus the whole ocean is in each thimble, even though each thimble can't contain the whole thing. This is what God is trying to tell us through Jesus. The late Thomas Merton, some of you might know him, he died in the late 60s. He was a Cistercian monk in the Roman Catholic denomination, and he was a mystic who traveled all around, and again, I know some of you remember him and even have read some of his books. He died early in life due to an accidental electrocution. But he had such profound teachings about the bigness and immenseness of God, the boundarylessness of God, that his teachings live on. And he shared in some of his writings how people would come to him and say they don't understand who God is. And he would say the good news, I hear you, but know that in your lack of understanding, that you are infinitely understood by God. You might not understand, but God completely understands you in your lack of understanding. And we hear this in the Psalms and in other places of Scripture, but I want to highlight Psalm 139 because our children are going to give the baptismal recipients a gift at the end that they have prepared for them, which highlights a portion of this psalm. And I'm just going to read a small portion of it because it's kind of long. But in Psalm 139, we hear the psalmist say, "Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them as yet existed. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God! Exclamation mark. How vast is the sum of them! Exclamation mark. I try to count them. They are more than the sand. I come to the end. I am still with you. You can hear the deep knowledge of God of each of us, even beyond what we ourselves can conceive. For God saw us when we were knit together in our mother's womb. We weren't even aware of that. Our mothers weren't even aware of that. How does that even work? This mystery that God knows what we will say even before we speak it. And I think also in this passage we hear about God knowing the days of our lives even before we live them. And sometimes people hear this as some type of predestination. But I understand this to mean that God knows us so well that God knows how it's going to go. Have you ever been to a restaurant with a person and they say, order for me, I'm going to go to the bathroom or something, or I'll be late, but go ahead and order for me, and you're like, okay. Why? Because you know them. And they know you know them. And they know you're going to order for them what they would like to have. That is the deep knowing of God for each of us, even beyond chicken or fish. One of my favorite teachers, James Finley, who teaches on the mystics through the Center for Action and Contemplation, highlights again how people, when he takes questions from people about these teachings of people from years past who didn't even have access sometimes to formalized education, religious education, he hears people ask questions, and one person said in their question, I'm confused. And in James Finley's response, he says, yes, but here's the thing. God's not confused about you. God's love for you is unconditional. And this is something about which God has great clarity. My friends, this difficult teaching of the good news of Jesus takes us a lifetime to learn and trust. It's good news which seems too good to be true, and its boundarylessness is beyond our comprehension. Even if we were to try to count all the grains of sand on the shore, we would come to the end and we would still be with God. But today, we are bringing it home and entering into that truth so that each of us can know it more deeply. We're going to baptize 6 little people. And as we say our baptismal promises, we will remember again that we are a work in progress, every single one of us. Through the daily activities of our lives, God helps us discover God's unconditional love. And this is what makes possible a world which reflects God's love, our ability to receive it so that God can pass it on through us. So, give me your answer. Are you ready to join me in baptizing these babies? Okay, then I want to ask the parents and the godparents to come up to the center, please.